Good afternoon and welcome to Central Coast Voices. As you probably know, I'm your host, Fred Monroe. Our goal on Central Coast Voices is to bring you credible, valid information and insights from diverse members of our community. Central Coast Voices wants to address how today's choices will affect tomorrow's community, and frankly, in some cases, how lack of choices may affect our community. And how we look at the long-term ramifications of change or lack of change in our society. Some of our topics are rather heated and rather pointed. Other ones are more relaxed and but still very insightful. And our topic today, we hope you will enjoy. We're going to really talk about Slolio, which is a gathering of true stories and true storytellers that is done on a monthly basis at Linnea's in downtown San Luis Obispo. Want to remind you that this is a call-in program. You are welcome to be part of this discussion at any point during the program. The phone number is 805-781-3875. That's 781-3875. This is Community Public Radio KCBX, and you are our community, and we want to be together in this conversation, so please don't be shy. I'm talking today with three storytellers, and we're going to talk about the concept of telling stories. And actually, in some cases, we're going to talk about the difference between telling true stories and not true stories. The word oleo is, by definition, a mixture or medley, a hodgepodge, or a collection of various artistic or literal issues and how they're looked at. And there's a bunch of people who get together every month at Linnea's in downtown San Luis Obispo, and they put on something called the Slolio. It's basically a time of storytelling, and it's an opportunity to gather together, tell stories. It may be seen as somewhat different than some of the things you may think of with storytelling, because it is focused primarily on true stories, and how true stories fit into the storytelling realm is one of the things that we'll talk about today. My guests are Kirk Henning. He is the founder and leader of the Slolio program. Many of you may know him. He's a longtime visible storyteller in our community. He's been involved in programs both in Cayucas and in Morro Bay, and he's been all over the county and beyond. Storytelling is not his day job, but it is something that he probably does a lot of because he chooses to. Gene Malter, is it pronounced Malter?
Melter,
pardon me. Anyway. I apologize because you did send me a correct pronunciation, but I'm notoriously good at botching those up. She is a storyteller and a writer. And Michael Kaplan, who does tell us what his day job is, he's actually the fund development manager for Transitions Mental Health Association, along with being a storyteller and a screenwriter. And they're going to talk today, and actually the good news is, because I have three storytellers in the room, is that you might hear me less than you're getting tired of hearing, and them more, and that's probably where we want to go with this. In my mind, stories have always been something that was based upon fables or based upon things that may have a point but are not necessarily always true. And I really did query my guests before the program today, and I said, gee, are we indeed talking about a program that is focused primarily on factual stories? I indeed got a rousing yes from all of them. So we're going to be looking at storytelling maybe from a different direction than you've thought about it before, and that's probably where we'll start. Kirk, I'll go to you first, since you're the founder of this event and it's been going on for a while. What in the world is Slolio?
Well, it's something that's beyond my expectations. First of all, it's just been an amazing experience for me to witness. Because I was a fan of the Moth podcast for a long time. There's a podcast called The Moth that started back east and took off, and now it's huge. It's a national organization. They'll get audiences in the thousands to listen to people get up and tell true stories. And I was looking for a venue to do that here in the county because I thought it'd be a great thing for our community as well. And it just so happened Marianne Orm, who is the owner along with David, her aunt, the owners of Linnea's, called me up and said, I'd like to do a storytelling thing here at Linnaeus. And so I said, I have the thing for you. And so opened it up to the community, invite anyone to come up and tell a true story. It's based on a theme each month. This month's theme in December is bucking the trend. We've had themes like fish out of water or themes such as that. And anyone can develop a story based on that theme. It doesn't have to be exactly what the theme is about, just what the theme evokes for you. And the quality of the stories and the storytelling that I've been fortunate enough to witness at each of these events has just been amazing to me. I will correct you on one thing. Now, you started off by saying true stories, and then you switched over to factual stories. And there's a difference.
Okay.
There is a difference. What's that movie, The Seven Samurai, where the same story is told seven times, and you see it. You see seven different stories. And so they are true stories. There's an old African saying that says, you know, this story is a lie, but that doesn't mean there isn't truth in it. And so it's true stories based on that storyteller's interpretation or perspective of what is true.
Well, that brings up a very good point, because one of my first thoughts is if you have a topic every month, or a theme, and I guess you said theme, not topic necessarily. So again, that's as different as true in fact, I think. Yes, the story someone may tell, they may have to tweak in order to fit the theme, and you may have a storyteller who is telling a story that they didn't experience or have firsthand knowledge of. So they're sharing a story that may have been told to them only once, okay, Jean's shaking her head. So
no,
I'll just,
generally
I'll...
people are the main character in the stories they tell. And the story is told, the experience is described from their perspective. And that's generally how it goes, and that makes the most powerful story too, because then you get a sense of the emotion that the teller experienced when they were going through that experience. And when people try to tell a secondhand story, you don't get so much of a sense of what the main characters, and we'll just call them characters, they're real people, felt during the experience. And all the stories involve some sort of experience. It's not a list of events. It's not a travelogue. It's not a list of facts or dates. Some experience someone had at some point in their life that evoked a strong emotion, and maybe there were high stakes in the situation.
So it's usually being presented by someone who was not an observer but a participant.
Correct.
Okay.
I think so. I think that when Kirk posts the theme at the beginning of the evening for the following month, it serves as a catalyst. It kind of sends you into the river of your own personal history. I know that I walk around for weeks thinking I got nothing for this particular topic. But I'm constantly diving down into childhood, into awkward adolescence, into, you know, reckless young adulthood, looking for something that matches up with the theme. And I don't know if that's everybody's process, but I find that it's such a different way from approaching stories than normal, where you're just, you know, sitting there telling your spouse or telling your friends what happened to you this particular week. And you tell that story a couple of times until you burn out on it, and then you move on to, you know, further into the present tense. And this sends you back. And I think that most people react to that, and that's what they're bringing to the evening.
Okay. Gene, in my notes that I believe, I'm not sure if this part of the notes came from you or from one of the other guests that was talking about you when they put some stuff together. You've presented 50 times or 50 plus times,
right,
as part of this. Do you think, and what my first thought is, I wanted to ask this as a question to you, do you think that your life, that you've been a more experiential person that brings that much material to the table, or are you a better observer that therefore gives you the ability to be a better storyteller. I'm surprised that you have 50 stories to share.
I think everyone has 50 or 500 stories. It's just the way you look at your life. Mm-hmm. But I've also done a lot of dumb stuff. And dumb stuff...
Welcome to the real world. Thank you. Yes. Right.
But dumb stuff makes for good stories. Or you either have a good time or a good story is an expression that I like and live by. And so if you were to... If you're a person who takes chances, I think you will have more stories because you'll have made more mistakes. Mistakes are great story fodder as well. When things go smoothly, that's not such a entertaining story.
Well, yeah, nobody wants to hear that story. Everybody okay, wants to yeah, hear right. how you turned a win into a wince.
Right. Okay, and that makes perfect sense because yeah. some of the best stories I've heard are stories that that make me cry, but they're stories that if I have an opportunity to hear them again, even though they may not be my story, in some cases my own stories make me cry, mm-hmm. of course. But I'm surprised. There's a number of times that people have said to me, "Well, I'll give you a specific example." There's a singer songwriter named Randall Williams, who I think is one of the best storytellers by song I've ever heard. He does a lot of things about sad stories. And I've listened to his CDs a number of times. I've invited him into my home to be the artist at one of our house concerts. Many of our guests loved him and appreciated him being there. But I got comments from people afterwards that said, you know, I'm surprised that you really wanted to bring and share with us a singer-songwriter, but in this case, a storyteller really is what he was, that shared so many sad stories. And I said, there seemed to be the most powerful stories that could be shared, mm-hmm. even though they were, in a lot of cases, they were sad experiences. Mm-hmm. So I'm surprised at people's different reactions to that. Do you find your audience, well, your audience is probably prepared for what's going to happen or gets a sense of it, even if they're coming for the first time, they've heard something about it. Hopefully some new people will come hearing about it today with our program. But I'm wondering whether or not you have people who walk out of the room saying, you know, I heard some stories that were just too painful to listen to tonight. I won't be back. And I guess that's maybe a question you don't like to have to answer, but I think it's a question that's important.
I've never heard that from anybody, although that there's the potential because the breadth of the stories goes from comic to deeply emotional and sometimes all in the same story as well, mm-hmm. a lot of times in the same story. And if the person that's telling the story is separated enough from the emotions of the story that they're telling, even though they're a part of the story and may be very emotional, then they might be able to convey it in a way where, as opposed to cutting too deep for a person, might actually offer some comfort because it's a shared experience. And that's really the main reaction that I get and I feel from the audience is that we're all sharing these experiences together and they're common experiences that we all have.
Do people ever bring their story as a song or is it always strictly a spoken word?
Always as a spoken word.
Spoken word.
Spoken word, yeah. Sometimes every once in a while, maybe a couple times, a handful of times, somebody's included a song in their story, sang it a cappella, but
some lyrics, some rhyming works in there sometimes. Yeah.
Yeah, spoken word without notes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I will share with you as I was putting this program together, something happened a couple of days ago that struck me as one of the most powerful stories I got to witness. I watched a 5-minute video of this, and I wish I had been present when it happened. And To give you some perspective, I need to share a little bit about what it was. As you know, that there's been a protest going on in the Dakotas over a water project. There was a series of veterans, some of them Native American or First Nation people, but a lot of the veterans who were there were Anglo, not First Nation veterans. One of those was Wesley Clark Jr., the son of General Wesley Clark, who did a presentation. that was, for lack of a better word, a rather cathartic apology for the way Native Americans had been treated. And he spoke that as the words coming from a veteran, that even though he had never been part of that, as a veteran of U.S. military, he felt like he was connected and could speak for past transgressions of the military. I watched a video of that, and my first thought was, it was an incredibly powerful, cathartic moment. My second thought was, my God, I would have done anything to just have been able to be in the room to experience the interaction of those people. And that kind of story, there's a thousand stories in that room. I suspect if there was anybody from the Central Coast who was there, I would encourage you, please, to contact us or contact the people doing Slow Oleo about that story, because that was kind of why I asked earlier whether or not these were all first person stories. Probably the best story that I could share from that experience was that I was just sorry, as an Anglo veteran, that I couldn't be there to be part of that group standing with Wes Clark. But I wonder about people who share those kinds of stories. The sharing of that would be kind of a stretch for me to share it as almost a third person to the story. And I don't know how you tie those things together.
No, because you bring your history into that room if you had been in that room, and your expectations, and then this incredible event happens, and you'll have a reaction to it, and you'll be telling that story the rest of your life, and maybe telling it a different way as you go through life and learn more things and change. But everybody in that room will tell that story for the rest of their lives, and everybody will tell it a different way.
I think, you know, the sharing of stories with each other. There was an old folk tale that I remember that about two soldiers that were battling each other all day, all night until exhaustion. And they were so exhausted they just couldn't continue fighting each other anymore, and so they ended up laying next to each other, not able to get up because they were so tired. And one of them asked the other, "Well, where are you from?" And the other one said, "I'm from such and such place." And then asked, "Well, how many children do you have?" And so on and so forth, until they ended up speaking all night. And then when daybreak came, they both got up and just walked away. Can you imagine being able to, instead of shooting somebody that you've never met before, actually finding out what their story is, and then you find out, oh, we have a lot in common. Once we know other people's stories, we gain so much deeper understanding about who they are and who we are and what our shared experiences are, and can find common ground. And there's such a problem now of not hearing each other's stories these days, and all the problems that leads to is.
There's two other things about that. I mean, we live in such a digitized age now where you can absolutely choose that you're going to hear a certain type of news and a certain type of story that is completely customized to your point of view. You come to Slolio, which we haven't told you yet, is the third Wednesday of every month at Linnea's Cafe at 7 p.m. You come to Slolio, you are surrendering that control. You don't know what you're going to hear. On a full night, you're going to hear 10 different stories, and some of them may really involve you, and some you may relate to, and some you might feel, well, they're wearing out their welcome, or, you know, you just want to get to the next one. But it's truly that smorgasbord, and you don't get to pick and choose. You don't get to hear the two that you want to hear the most and go home. And the other thing is that they're not bite-sized. You know, they're 8 to 10 minutes long. They have time to breathe, and they have time to develop, and they're not 148 characters. they're not a front page of a website and out. And I appreciate both of those things.
Yeah, we probably need, Michael, that probably brings us to what we need to discuss. Even though the esoteric nature of what we're talking about seems to be what I get stuck on sometimes. Let's talk about the structure of the evening, because obviously one of the things that you would like to see happen, and I would like to see happen, is that your audience and your participants grow. So, but I think you may have a lot of people who want to come to tell a story, but don't know how to get started. My assumption would be that it's nice if someone comes to experience the evening before they come with a story to tell, but there may be a reason why a spontaneous story for someone who's never been there before might be a different experience for them and everybody else. So what's the structure of the evening? What's the logistics of the whole experience?
Well, if you're interested in telling a story, then there's a sign-up sheet that you show up. You fill out the sheet, and 9 times out of 10, you'll be able to share your story. We usually have just enough storytellers to fill the evening, which is usually about 10 to 11 storytellers for that night. We have a small core group of people that are regulars, like Gene and Michael, who are very polished and just fantastic storytellers and story writers. And then we have other people that may, like you say, may have never gone up and told a story before, but feel moved for some reason to tell a story. We'll get some people, I call them our vagabonds, who come in off the street. Maybe they're traveling through. They hear about it somehow. They get up and they just tell a great story, and then we never see them again. We have other people that aren't quite as polished and have never done it before, but it's a safe audience. So if you are attracted to trying it out and getting up in front of people, I know it's, for a lot of people, it's a really scary thing just to get up in front of people and talk, but it's a really safe audience to do that with. So if you're on the fence about it, this is a great place to do it. It's very intimate, and it's like you're talking with your family in your living room.
And Kirk does a fantastic job of emceeing the evening. He keeps it moving along. He pretty much puts the order together on the fly, and I can't say enough about that, because he gives every event shape and just a nice convivial feel.
Gene.
Yes.
What was the first story you told here?
Oh, I do remember that. It was 5 years ago. I attended Solio one time just to see what it was like, and then the next time went for it. And the theme was Stranger Than Fiction. And I told the story about being in Catholic school in the 70s and the principal, Sister Enda, finding a copy of The Exorcist on the playground. And
scandalous.
and her coming to our eighth grade classroom to try to find the culprit who had brought the book to school and who had dog-eared the special pages.
That was your first story.
That was my first story.
Okay. How many times had you told that story before you came to Slolio?
I had told it at dinner parties, several times over the years. But when I saw the structure, 8 to 10 minutes, I knew there was a chance I could go on for too long and not get to the climax of the story. And, you know, there would be no resolution for the audience. So I typed it out until it was about 1,300 words is me, 8 to 10 minutes talking. And I've done that ever since. And I don't memorize the stories, but I do type them out so that I get the right length, so there's a beginning, middle, and an end.
You don't use that as a script, though. You use that just as something that you pre-read so you can organize your thoughts?
So I can organize my thoughts, exactly. and look it over. What are the main points I have to hit? Because every story needs a certain amount of information to make sense, and then get up and you're on a stage in front of a microphone in front of 30, 40 people. I'd say, fit in that room, mm-hmm. and then talk to them like you are sitting around a table.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so that was 5 years ago, mm-hmm. the first time you did that story at Slolio.
Yes.
Would you do that story any differently now than you did it 5 years ago?
Probably I would. Probably different things about the experience would strike me as more or less interesting. And I would say perhaps my feelings about my Catholic upbringing have changed, and there are different things I'd want to point out.
I've got another pointed question on this similar topic, mm-hmm. than two, because I know the programs, my understanding is that the programs are actually taped so people can go back and hear stories. Mm-hmm. Do you go back and listen to your own stories?
I do. Now, I perform in other venues and doing other things. I do stand-up comedy, for example. Mm. And I want to learn about performing. And this listening to the recordings is a way of critiquing myself. So what verbal tics do I have? Most people have them. Or what words do I tend to repeat? Things like that. So I do listen and then sort of think about what I want to do differently the next time.
I want to remind folks, we are talking with three people who are involved with an organization and a program called Slolio, which is basically a storytelling, I want to call it a round table, but it's really not a round table, but an open environment, storytelling environment at Linnaeus in San Luis Obispo. If you would like to be part of the discussion today, this is a call-in program, and you're welcome to call in. The phone number is 805-781-3875. That's 781-3875. And a lot of you have heard me say this before, but I'll say it one more time, and that is we have a program of about a half an hour more to go of our hour program, and I would encourage you, if you have part of the discussion you'd like to be part of, that you call in now as opposed to 5 minutes before the end of the program when we have a very difficult time trying to squeeze you in, even though for some reason people always have lots of things to say at the very last minute.
We are all really eager to lock horns with the anti-storytelling contingent. You know? I know you're out there. I know you're lurking and waiting to say something snide. We're ready for you. So,
who is that contingent, and what do they usually say to you, Michael? Because Michael, people may say things to you like that, but it may be about you, not the story.
Like you, Fred, they tend to say, "Can you talk a little less?"
Yes. Yeah. you talked about a little bit about the difference between stories in which true stories. Mm-hmm. As opposed to maybe folktale myth type of storytelling, which is what I've done for 20 plus years for families and so on and so forth.
I've paid you to lie to people before.
You have paid me to lie to people. That doesn't mean there wasn't truth in there. This experience of Slolio has been really enlightening to me after having been mainly a folktale teller and musician as well, in which I'm not a part of the story, and I'm telling about characters and so on and so forth. And I think as human species, it's been my experience. I mean, we take lessons through stories so easily; they just kind of sink into our bones, mm-hmm. especially when they're repeated over and over again. And having gone up and told true stories about myself at Slolio, first of all, it was pretty scary for me, especially at first. I was pretty nervous. When I perform regularly, I'm hardly ever nervous at all. But I was a lot more vulnerable telling my own story, and when I tell folktales, myths. I'm kind of envisioning that whole storybook inside my head. When I'm telling a true story about myself, there isn't that storybook in my head. It's just me telling the story. And it's been a really interesting experience for me. And I think I've gotten a different different reaction from the audience than what I usually get from a family audience telling folk tales and stuff. It's there's more of a connection to the emotions, I think, rather than a connection to the picture that's drawn when you tell a folk tale.
Okay, I want to tell a brief story, not because it's a story to tell, but because it's a story about stories that happen, and it brings up a point that I want to emphasize. A number of years ago, for those of you who are familiar with Live Oak Music Festival, Arlo Guthrie has performed at Live Oak Music Festival. Last time he performed at Live Oak Music Festival, his daughter, Sarah Lee Guthrie, was one of the performers with him. I had the opportunity to talk to Sarah Lee after the program, and I said to her, I said, you know, you sit down when your dad's doing a long presentation, and that was, by the way, I don't recall if he did Alice's Restaurant or not, but he was doing another long story. And I said, so Sarah Lee, literally, she put down her guitar, she's sitting with cross-legged on the stage, and very amused by her father's story. And so afterwards, I said, I find it interesting that you've probably heard these stories thousands of times, but you still find it funny. Do you still think your dad's funny? And the answer I got was critical to storytelling, and here's where I'm going this. She says, his telling of the story is not funny. The fact that every time he tells the story, it seems to include some new lie or twist on the truth, yeah. That's the part that's amusing. And that I think that probably is what probably makes it amusing for Arlo. It certainly is what keeps his daughter amused by the story. Does that kind of thing ever come up in a program like this? Because I'm thinking about this is, well, in the case of Alice's Restaurant, that indeed is a true story. Mm-hmm. His telling of it may not be completely true, mm-hmm. but it's a true story. Mm-hmm. Has anyone told a story at Slolio that someone else who was present was a witness to that story from a different perspective, and it's become either a counter story or a challenge to the story in some way? Yeah. Kirk's got a look on his face like he's not sure he wants to talk about this. Gene's saying yes. Okay.
Well, all of our spouses have exactly right. have attended right. Slolio, so okay. You can speak to that.
Yeah, so there might be a discussion in the car on the way home. But we all present our spouses in a very positive life, as they deserve. And most of our stories are more self-effacing. If there's going to be some sort of humor at someone's expense, it would most storytellers it's at their own expense, and people don't mind a little bit fudging of the facts, I guess you'd say, not of the truth. I guess we think of it, truth as being more of an emotional thing, the emotional truth of the story, but the facts. It doesn't really matter if this event took place in 1968 or 1969 sometimes when it's not tied to history in any way. So if your spouse or friend is in the audience and that you have a little difference of opinion about exactly how or when something happened, it doesn't really matter. What the point of a story is the main character, you, facing something in your life, going through some sort of experience, facing a challenge, and dealing with it.
Well, I'll go further and risk angering the storytelling gods, or you know, or being banned by Kirk. I mean, none of us have told a story or one particular story as many times as Arlo Guthrie might. But I know for myself, as I'm working one out, there always comes that point where I'm searching for the ending. I'm searching for a way that I want to wrap it up nicely and get off the stage with it, with a sense that I didn't just stop because I ran out of time or material. Mm-hmm. And that's when the temptation comes to fudge events, to create a little bit bigger of a Christmas bow than might be there with the narrative. And I'll admit I've given into that temptation at times because I just thought it was serving the story and nobody was going to hire a private detective.
Right.
And I think Gene was talking about the emotional truth, which is what the goal is. But there has to be some integrity, and there usually, I mean, I don't question that there isn't among our storytellers and our listeners that there isn't a lot of integrity. Now, the opposite end of the spectrum, I remember seeing one folktale storyteller one time, and in storytelling festivals, a lot of times, even though a storyteller tells a lot of folktales, sometimes they'll do true stories as well, just throw in into the mix, make it diverse. Well, I remember going to one storytelling festival and seeing one storyteller tell a true story about himself and about his son, and a very moving story. I can't remember exactly what the circumstances were, but he pretty much had the audience wrapped around his finger emotionally with this story, and then we came to find out later that he'd never been married and never had a son before. And and automatically our view of him changed, and it was a cheap, it felt like a cheap shot. And so a lot of times there's, it's an interesting conversation among storytellers. There's a borderline, there's a gray area between the truth and the facts, and but clearly that was an example of the integrity just wasn't there at all whatsoever. Mm-hmm. And so that was pretty clear.
Have you ever had to stop a story at the event?
No. I've never had to stop a story. I've felt like stopping a few stories.
I've really tried to signal him.
Yeah. But
there is a time limit, though.
Yeah, there is a time limit. And I've posted this on our website. I've got a page that has storytelling tips. And it also includes if you're there for any kind of proselytizing, espousing your religious or political views, then please save that for another venue, because that's really not the purpose of this event. This is about sharing stories with each other and not pushing your point of view on somebody else.
We've talked about this as somewhat free form. But I also know from experience, Kirk, that you've actually taught storytelling.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So do you teach people how to look at their stories and present truthful or factual stories in this environment? Or is that beyond the scope of what you're doing? Or did I give you an idea that hadn't occurred to you yet, which I doubt?
It actually has occurred to me. They do, for instance, a Moth organization, they run workshops all over the country. And they'll have somebody basically be a director for somebody who wants to tell a story and give tips and advice on how to make the story more effective. So we have not done that, although if I was thinking earlier today, if there's anybody that's on the fence about getting up and telling a story because they're just have that fear about getting up in front of people, be sure and just give me a call or Gene or Michael, somebody from us, and if you want to run it by us before getting up in front of a whole bunch of people, I think that's a good way to start your idea, I think.
Because it's not a deep, dark secret. One of the biggest fears of Homo sapiens is public speaking.
Right.
There are those of us who people would prefer we'd stop talking, but there's more people who are afraid of talking than there are that we would like to stop talking.
That sounded like my cue again. But, I would just say that, you know, to paraphrase, oh gosh, I think it was William Goldman. If you want to tell a good story, sometimes you have to tell about four or five bad ones.
Yeah, failure is not. Failure is good. Failure is good, and failure is not really failure. If you
absolutely
get
not.
It's just a learning. It's an opportunity for learning.
Oh yeah, I walk away and wonder, okay, now why didn't I get a laugh on that part, and why did it just seem to tank right there in the middle? I lost them. I told them too much, or I betrayed something, and whatever trust I had going with the audience kind of fell away, and then it took the whole rest of the story to build back the goodwill. You know, those are always very, very interesting, experiences.
Yeah, in my performing storytelling, I've repeated stories I've told some stories, you know, hundreds of times probably. And so I can pretty much gauge where the audience is going to laugh and react and so on and so forth. For this, every story is really told for the first time in front of an audience. And so it is interesting. It's always surprising to me, too, where the reaction is. I wish we had more opportunity to repeat the stories that we tell, though, because, I mean, there is no better editor than the audience. And, boy, mm-hmm. you can just really hone the story down when you do it repeatedly. Mm-hmm. We did have a five-year anniversary event here a few months ago, and we had it at Slow Little Theater because we needed a bigger venue. Mm-hmm. We filled it up, sold it out, and we included music. We had a friend of mine, Cindy Myers, Tim Pacheco, our Ragged mm-hmm. Company, and I approached Cindy and said, I'd really like to have some music to go along with this program as well. And so I gave her the stories that were going to be told. We picked not the best. I call it the favorites because there's so many. I can't mm-hmm. say any are the best. We had 10 storytellers. Gave Cindy who those storytellers were, pointed her to the recordings on the website, and she picked her set list based on those stories, and it was just a really neat interaction between the storytellers and the songs that they chose. Mm. I don't even know where I started off in that whole story, but anyway.
It was the opportunity to tell stories more than once.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Repeating a story, yeah. So those were all stories that had been told before, and each one, I heard both Gene and Michael tell a story that they told at Slolio before, and, yep, it was a little bit different and a little bit improved.
Uh-huh. Well, I may have asked this question before, and if I did, I'm sorry I forgot the answer. Has anybody told the same story, not necessarily by choreographing telling the same story, but two individuals that had a firsthand experience of the same situation that they then by happenstance shared?
My wife and I have played with that idea. I've been going to Slowly about half the time that Jean has, about 2.5 years. And my wife, Susan, came one time and told a story of her own. And there was once when we talked about telling a his take, her take version of the same story. Didn't get it together, but that was a thought.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. On a given night, there's such a variety. So you might have an outdoors person tell an adventure story or a survival story. Mm-hmm. Another person might talk about giving up her baby for adoption. And then another person tells a humorous story about their encounter with a car mechanic. So there's a huge variety. So the odds are people aren't going to tell even a similar story.
Although we recently had the theme, cats away, mice will play. And I think at least two or three people talked about finding mice in their house.
Okay.
Yeah, there's wide latitude with the theme. For instance, this bucking the trend this month. I mean, you can get up and tell a story about deer. You can tell a story about a rodeo. You can tell a story about, you know, it doesn't necessarily have to be what the phrase normally evokes. I mean, mm-hmm. it can be, there's wide latitude.
So Gene's told at least 50 stories. How many people have gotten even close to that?
Nobody. No one. No. No, nobody.
Nobody. I don't think
so. Not even close.
Yeah.
Not even close.
Talking is my superpower.
Well, I asked that because you were so kind of cavalier about, yeah, I told 50 stories, almost kind of like, what's the big deal if 50 wasn't that many stories? So I thought maybe I was just off the mark in thinking that 50 stories was a phenomenally high number of stories to tell.
I think, but you know, I grew up in a family where stories were valued. I'm one of 8 children. For one thing, and so telling a good story got you some attention, and
I have to laugh and interject. In my household, my stories were not valued; people wanted me to just shut up. So, yeah.
Right, yeah. And my father was an entertainer, and you know, he was in show business, and he was Irish, and he was just a good storyteller. So we learned how to structure stories and how to keep people's attention most of the time, not all the time. And I had told 50 stories by the time I was 10, I'm sure. So, so it's not a big deal if you come from a storytelling culture. And that could be a whole country or it can be just your family.
Yeah. She's being humble. I mean, I watch Jean tell stories, and it's effortless. It's like it's like she's breathing, and she's just has such a wonderful voice and a wonderful sense of humor. I've told about 25 stories. Every month I feel like I'm out of gas. That was the last one, and Kirk puts up the new theme, and I think never am I going to find another story. And I'm regularly in awe and appreciative of Jean.
Yeah, Jean, do you have any children?
I do have two children. Okay. Boy, have they heard a lot of stories. Okay.
Do they tell stories about you?
They tell stories, but I'm not in front of me.
That's the closest.
That's
the closest to speechless I've heard you now. Go ahead. Okay.
I think they consider me an eccentric parent, and so I imagine they tell lots of stories, and I tried to make their childhood colorful and interesting, and I think they have lots of stories. And then we had some, my husband and I, maybe some unconventional parenting ideas, and so when kids, especially when they grow up and go off to college, I think probably swap stories. Well, this is what my parents did on my birthday, so that kind of thing, and
Because I think it's reality for every child. As you become an adult, your parents become bigger lunatics than they were as a child. And that's my children have believed that. And I challenge them on that, except for the fact I think about my parents and I believed it about them. So it indeed is an ongoing process. But yeah. Has any of your family come and listen to you at Slolio?
Yes. My husband, and then who's also technical support for the event. Okay. And then
so he's a couple come, of he's sisters. Come more than once.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Okay. Yes. And a couple of sisters. And then once in a while, I'll point family members to a recording, the family members who live far away. I have a story about my mother's last Scrabble game before she died. And I knew that some of my siblings would enjoy the story. It might mean something to them. And although they disagree on how exactly everything went down, I do share the stories I think will mean something to people. I'll point them out. Mm-hmm. And because sharing stories are a way to connect. They're a way to connect you with people you know and people you don't know. Stories are how we feel empathy for each other.
Well, because my second question with that is whether or not any of those have felt compelled to then tell a story at Slolio based upon your doing that.
Okay. Not so far.
Okay. We're almost out of time, and we've got, of course, one late caller here, and I'll scold them, okay? Charm, you're there, and you've got about 30 seconds, so jump on in.
Okay, I have a story that happened at Sea Oaks Pool where I was leading aqua aerobics, and I announced that I had recently had my 93rd birthday, which is pretty good.
Wow.
Yeah. And one of the women who's joined recently said, well, that's amazing. When it's your time, how would you like to go? And I thought, good grief, this is no question for here, but I have to make some kind of an answer. And I said, I'm thinking. And immediately I was saying mentally, dear God, send me a message. Send me something that I can give a good answer to this question about how I'd like to go. And the words came black hole. So I said, oh, I have an idea. I said, you know, like Star Wars, up in the heavens, there is something called a black hole where it can be sending out new stars or sucking in old stars or whatever. And I've decided that I would like to go by suction. And they said, oh, suction, what do you mean? I said, you know, the part that is doing that is coming closer to me some big something that I'm not quite sure, but I'm scared, you know, and all of a sudden it goes, and that's it. And that was how I ended the story, and they laughed their heads off.
That's an awesome answer.
Good. That's great.
That's good. And by the way, that was the one-minute version of that story. If you'd like to do an 8 to 10-minute version of that story,
that's the length of the story. I mean, I was out there teaching exercises in the water, and this challenge came to me.
Okay.
To keep the program light.
Okay. Thanks for the call.
Thank
you. Take
care. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
You know, I'd embrace myself when someone calls in and has a story to tell. It's like, oh, my gosh, we have about only a couple of minutes for them to fit some time in here, too. But that was very nice.
She did a good job.
Yeah, she did a very good job. But my hunch is there's really an 8 to 10-minute story there. Yeah. Anyway. Yeah.
It's a good opportunity, you know, along the lines of the children and stuff. The other side benefit of all this is you get to be recorded telling stories about yourself, so that your children.
That's my thought is that's the reason not to do it.
Come on, Fred. Your kids want to know.
I'm incredibly thankful for that. I have a cousin who lives in Prague who goes to the website regularly to listen to the stories and just tell me, oh, I heard that one.
Nice.
You know, that was great. It's a nice way for us to be able to connect. And I grew up listening nonstop to comedy albums. And this is just a chance occasionally to, you know, listen to the story that I told the month before, hear the audience laughing and feel like, oh, wow, that's me. I'm doing that. That's, right. You know, that same kind of thrill.
Okay. Well, you can continue because you're at your last word time. So you've got about a minute and a half to convince us of what we need to know we didn't figure out yet.
For me, I think there's three major attributes of a terrific Slolio story. One is that there's a voice, there's a point of view about what's happening. You know, the other that there's events that are intrinsically compelling, and then ultimately the third thing is that there's a theme. And it can be the one that Kirk has created for that month, but it's a theme that just it lifts the story up, and it goes from this happened to me to this happens to us. And I think that's what makes a great story and brings the room together at that moment.
So it's the story that becomes not just your story, but a story that everybody sharing with you becomes everyone's story.
I like the way I said it more, yeah.
I just thought I was being an active listener by giving you back my understanding of the story.
That was fabulous.
I didn't want it to be a better understanding of the story, Michael. I just wanted it to be an understanding of the story. Anyway, by the way, for listeners, I've known Michael for a while, and we serve on some committees and some things together, so we jousted before. I put him as far out of my vision today as I could, but he's here anyway. Gene, it's your turn.
Okay.
Most of our listeners know, and I tell my guests a couple of minutes to make sure you get to say what you want without me interrupting.
Okay. Well, this is what I'd like to say. Over the holidays, when you get together with your loved ones, swap some stories. So turn off the devices, put your cell phones in the deep freeze, sit and look at each other and talk and ask each other questions. And if you want to know how to elicit a story from, say, a relative, get real specific. Tell me about your first kiss. Tell me about the time you were shipped off to war. How did that feel? Stories that have strong emotion, a component of strong emotion, fear, embarrassment, joy, sadness. And you will learn a lot about that person you're talking to if you get a story out of them. And you will feel a stronger connection for a long time. It will really be worth your while.
See, you made the mistake, though, of being briefer than you needed to be. So now I get to ask you another question. What's your next story that you're going to tell? Do you have one in your mind for what you're going to tell next month?
I do. So the theme is bucking the trend. Okay. And I take that to mean being out of step with some sort of fashion, and it'll be about how we raised our children, to our two boys, to eschew weaponry, and that made them absolutely passionate about it. And so we'll explore how that parental theory just went awry.
Okay. Very good answer. And that's a very engaging theme because it's come up before. Yes, anyway. Okay. Since it's you founded the event, Kirk, you get to have the last word other than my closing remarks of the program. So
well,
what do we may want to make sure people remember?
I can give some of the nuts and bolts. Our website is slolio.org. That's slolio.org. Okay. I spelled it right. Good. And as we said before, we record all the stories, or at least for the ones, the storytellers that desire to have it recorded. So all the stories from all 5 years that we've been going are up there. We're also on Facebook, so just put in Slolio on Facebook, and a lot of Facebookers out there. So events are announced there. And what else? I just really encourage people to, especially those that would like to tell a story, to come out. It's a good place to come out and tell a story and get it down digitally.
Yeah. In Santa Barbara, there's a program that's tied to the Moth series that's starting there also.
Well, the Moth organization actually it's the actual Moth organization that every once in a while comes to Santa Barbara and produces one of their events. The Moth is headquartered in New York, and most of their events are in New York. But now they're in, I don't know, probably about 10, 15 cities across the country. So they were – I think they are at the Arlington Theater or Libero Theater, I forget which, down in Santa Barbara last year. And I'm sure they'll be back again.
Yeah. There was an article in the Santa Barbara Independent back in April. So I think if anyone is looking for stuff about Santa Barbara, if you Google Moth in Santa Barbara or Moth on the website for the Santa Barbara Independent, you'll find a good story from last spring about that also. Thank you, folks. I appreciate it. It's been a good program. You can always count on having storytellers on, making sure that an hour program, you don't look at the clock and say, oh, what are they going to talk about next? Anyway, this has been Central Coast Voices. I want to thank you for all listening. Central Coast Voices, as I've told you before, but I'll tell you again, is part of a program put on by the Action for Healthy Communities, arm of the San Luis Obispo County Community Foundation. Forgot what county I was talking about at the moment. You can find the report that gives you a snapshot of what's going on in San Luis County at actionslo.org. The new report is coming out later this month. It comes out every 3 years. Next week, Chris Kington Barker will be with you, and she's going to be speaking with Kyle Wins, and he is the CEO and co-founder of Central Coast-based iFixit, an organization you may be familiar with, but if you're not, you should find out about. And they're going to that's basically a global repair community whose motto is "Together we are fixing the world, one broken gadget at a time." Joining that discussion will be Aaron Gomez, who's the co-owner and founder of Gold Concepts, an environmentally sustainable jewelry store in San Luis Obispo. Aaron is also a new city council member in San Luis Obispo. And they're going to talk about the importance of sustainable, conscious consumerism in the holidays. And indeed, they agree beyond that. They want you to look at how you shop and how you're a consumer and how that affects both our environment, our world, our local, and our larger community. So join them. Central Coast Voices, as I've said before, is a production for Action for Healthy Communities. I want to thank the underwriting of Joan Gellert Sargent, who's helped us produce this program. You can reach us at voices@kcbx.org or 543-2323. Thank you to my guest, Kirk Henning, Gene Meltzer, Michael Kaplan, and thank you for listening.